If you happen to just be joining us, the NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments for this year have been canceled in a statement that was just released. Today, NCAA President Mark Emmert and the Board of Governors canceled the Division I men's and women's 2020 basketball tournaments, as well as all remaining winter and spring NCAA championships.
That was from March 12th, when we officially learned that March Madness was taking on a more darkly literal meaning in America this year. But starting tomorrow, men's college basketball is finally back, albeit mid-pandemic. And today, ESPN's Myron Medcalf catches you up on a season that will be vastly different from any other you may remember. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, November 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Myron, I am incredibly excited to talk to you today. So thank you for joining ESPN Daily.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited.
Myron Medcalf has been covering college basketball for ESPN for nearly a decade. So my excitement, I should admit, comes from a place of utter ignorance. Because after 8 months of this pandemic, after a cancellation of March Madness, I have literally no idea, Myron, what to expect from college basketball at all this season in terms of the virus, in terms of what's happening on the floor. All I really know right now is that both Duke and Arizona announced yesterday that they are postponing their opening games because of COVID, and Tennessee's Rick Barnes got diagnosed with coronavirus. So let's just begin with tip-off tomorrow. What's this all going to look like?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question in college basketball. A lot like college football, most of the games are scheduled to be played. Obviously, COVID was a challenge for college football. I think for college basketball, that'll be magnified by about 10 because you have more than 300 teams that are going to try to kick this season off. So I think everybody's just crossing their fingers and hoping for the best and not knowing what's ahead is sort of the theme of the season.
300 teams all kind of spinning this roulette wheel is a lot to process. So what are the protocols, like the health protocols that teams and players are going to try to abide by this season?
I think that's another important question, and it's difficult to answer in that there are so many different protocols by state, by county, depending on which conference you're in. I mean, you're talking 32 different conferences. I'll give you an example. The American Athletic Conference, they're going to test 3 days per week during the season. Can't do it consecutive days. That's what NCAA guidelines recommend. However, at Temple, they have to abide by the city of Philadelphia's protocols, which say they have to test 7 days before competition every single day. So you have, even within conferences, different rules and regulations. I've talked to athletic directors in California who are telling me that they still have to submit plans to their local authorities to get approval to compete this season. Forget hosting the team, forget any of the other details, just to be able to get back on the floor. So you're going to see a lot of that chaos unfold in the coming months.
So you are very clearly now a healthcare reporter on top of being a college basketball reporter. So Myron, explain to me what is happening in these pseudo bubbles where regular season games are going to take place. One of them is an 11-day event that starts tomorrow called Bubbleville, which has real Dr. Seuss vibes from what I can tell. But what exactly is Bubbleville?
Well, we're going to find out. But it's basically a bunch of teams all in one site at the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut, where the idea is you have everybody at one location. There will be testing measures, extreme testing measures, with the goal being to kind of emulate what you saw with the NBA bubble on a somewhat smaller scale. They don't have the $200 million that the NBA spent, so the resources are different. But I think their attempt is to mimic that. And when you're there, there will be security in these hotels, making sure that people are following protocols. And then there will be specific places that you can and can't go. The challenge is going to be, can you do that for dozens and dozens of teams and make sure that everybody's following the rules? We saw the NBA and the resources they put into that. It's a different level, I think, with college basketball in an attempt to pull this off for the next couple of weeks. There are certainly some challenges attached to that.
And there's already issues at Bubbleville, right? I mean, the news that Baylor and some other schools have already pulled out of this tournament.
Florida, COVID issues, they pull out. Baylor Scott Drew, head coach there, test positive, announces that yesterday. They pull out. And then Arizona State, which was scheduled to play Baylor in Bubbleville, says, you know what? We're not comfortable. So you already have teams that have been moving things around. But it's an idea that I think we'll see throughout the season. How can you play college basketball with 300 plus teams unless there is some sort of pseudo bubble environment?
So I want to talk about travel here. Like, that's as important seemingly as anything else. When there isn't a bubble scenario, Myron, how are teams planning to get places safely? How is travel for, say, Duke, a Power Five school, compared to like a mid-major?
A lot different. If you're Duke or Kentucky, you have almost created a bubble on campus. Kentucky at their dorm, their private dorm for athletes, they have a 24-hour chef who cooks all their meals. The practice facility is 100 feet away. And then when they go play games, Pablo, they hop on their private jet and they go to that game. Whereas I've talked to coaches in Montana, let's say, who are trying to schedule games where they're asking opposing teams to only make them fly through one airport instead of three. I know a team that's looking to make 13, 14-hour trips to North Dakota one way, and then they're going to have to turn back around and do it to get back home. So the travel situation will depend largely on your budget. And then location and logistics, too. Hawaii is in a situation where now if you travel to Hawaii to play a game, you have to test negative at least 72 hours before arriving on the island. But in the WAC conference where Hawaii is, officials there are trying to figure out if there's a way, once Hawaii comes to the mainland, can they keep them here for a few weeks to avoid any of the travel nightmares? But I don't think they're avoidable. This is going to be a mess.
Man, all of that chaos, all of the differences between the haves and the have-nots becoming more obvious. How does scheduling get affected, Myron, by all of that, especially for those smaller schools?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I can tell you that half of college basketball didn't have a schedule. So, I mean, that's how it's been affected. I mean, a lot of this, man, honestly, is going to be Saturday morning at the YMCA. Hey, do you have an open date? I have an open date. Are you available to play Saturday? Because that's just sort of how it's unfolding. Teams are largely focused on their league schedule, making sure they can get conference play going. But if you're a smaller school, you want this bye game money.
So, Myron, just to be clear for those who aren't familiar with the economy of college basketball, the real economy, when you say bye games, that's B-U-Y. Explain what a bye game is in the first place.
So basically, the Power Five schools and the richer schools, in order to create a schedule, a non-conference schedule, they have to bring in teams for home games because they make a ton of money off home games from concessions and parking and tickets and all that stuff. So they'll pay a school to come to their place. For instance, North Carolina Central played Anthony Edwards in Georgia last year. Georgia paid North Carolina Central $90,000. They gave them hotel rooms. They might give them a per diem. They might pay for their bus fare, that kind of thing. So that's the bye game economy. And that's sort of the secret of college basketball, is a lot of schools are on the road constantly November and December because they're just making a ton of money for their athletic department through those bye games. Those bye games, both because of the economy and because of COVID concerns, are disappearing for a lot of those schools. So you've got teams from smaller conferences trying to figure out a way to make up for that. And they're the more anxious programs, whereas you'll hear the Power Five say, hey, let's just play conference play. It's no big deal to us. We're going to make money either way. It's the smaller schools that are trying to figure out November and December, and they haven't had a ton of luck with that.
And the biggest engine of the college basketball economy, of course, is March Madness. That we didn't get, infamously, this year. It's one of the biggest things in our industry, on the planet. What have been the domino effects, Myron, on and off the court, of the cancellation of the tournament in March?
I think a lot of guys who would have tested the waters and stayed in the NBA draft didn't go because, as you know, it's a showcase for a lot of these athletes. You can count numerous individuals who have been big stars in March, and that's turned into NBA opportunities. So I think a lot of guys who came back not having a tournament and a chance to impress scouts and executives, that was a big part of that. The other thing has just been the financial element. The NCAA has been preaching the same message. We have to have a tournament this year because last year they lost $375 million by not having an NCAA tournament. Now, what does that money mean? The NCAA makes more than 90% of its revenue off the tournament. And a lot of schools make a ton of money for their leagues off the NCAA tournament through a payout system that's essentially based on the number of teams that get into the tournament from your league and how far they go. For instance, Loyola Chicago makes that run to the Final Four a couple of years ago. That was $8 million for their conference that everybody gets to eat off. So it's not just the NCAA losing money. It's all these leagues and schools as well, which is why the NCAA has been pretty adamant that they have to find a way to have a tournament.
They've announced, the NCAA, that the 2021 tournament will be played in a single location. Indianapolis is the current favorite. What other details do we know, Myron, about how that plan might look?
It's interesting because, like, I called health officials in Indianapolis and they were like, what plan? You know, so they didn't know anything about it. So when the NCAA says they're talking to Indianapolis, like, I don't know what that means at this point. But they basically want to put the tournament in one city, avoid the travel, avoid crisscrossing the country. The funny thing is they're going to be crisscrossing the country for 4 months. So I don't know why the tournament changes that.
Right.
But they basically want to pull this off and they think this is their best chance. Get 8 gyms around Indianapolis, play the games, get to the Final Four, have a tournament in one place. And logistically, they think they can pull it off. I've talked to coaches who think it's impossible, and they just don't see how 68 teams do that. But more than anything, it's the NCAA saying, if we got to get a space shuttle and go play on the moon, we're not losing $375 million again.
All right, Myron, after the break, you've been a healthcare reporter, a business reporter. I want to get you back to how I know you originally, which is as a college basketball reporter who can tell us what teams and players we should be looking out for as the actual season gets underway.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, Myron. So the other downside of the tournament being canceled in March is that we didn't get to really meet who's still on these college rosters, even with the players leaving for the NBA draft. So the AP has released their preseason rankings, and the top five teams are as follows. Number one, Gonzaga. Number two, Baylor. Number three, Villanova. Number four, Virginia. Number five, Iowa. So what would you say that those teams have in common?
They're old. You know, I mean, there's a bunch of experience on those rosters. And I think more than anything in a year like this, that is going to be a significant advantage. You know, you have a team like Iowa coming in, and Luka Garza there, and Virginia has a ton of experience with the guys they're bringing back, Ke'Ai Clark and Sam Hauser, the transfer coming in. Villanova, Colin Gillespie. So I think you have a number of teams that just have veterans and they have experience. And when you talk to those teams and those coaches, they're saying sort of the same thing. We have to adjust if games are canceled, if there are interruptions, but they're trusting on veteran leadership. The teams that have young guys coming in are not as certain. They're expecting more hiccups in all of this. So I think those experienced teams at the top that you mentioned have an advantage.
It's also admittedly pretty striking to get a list like that and not see Duke or Kentucky or Carolina or Kansas, the blue bloods that most fans are most familiar with. So where are they at heading into this season?
They're all still good. I just think it might take a little more time for sort of America to meet them. It's much easier when you have Zion on your roster to say, hey, here's Duke. You know, it got everybody in America knows who that is. But I think they're just in a situation where they're good, but I don't think they're better than those top five teams at the top. But Kentucky, to me, is the team we're not talking about enough. Olivier Saar comes in, the transfer out of Wake Forest. They got the young guy, B.J. Boston, who played with Bronny Jr. Out in high school. Really talented prospect. So I think they're going to be pretty good, and more people will be talking about them in the coming weeks. Duke, Matthew Hurt comes back. Jalen Johnson, the five-star prospect. could be a lottery pick. He's going to be in the mix for them. I think they'll be good. North Carolina, Garrison Brooks, veteran, could be one of the top players in America. I think they'll be much better than what you saw last year in that season where Cole Anthony was injured. And then Kansas, Marcus Garrett is probably going to be an All-American, maybe the best two-way player in the country. But I'd say for all of those teams, the common trait is they don't have that one guy that makes you go, oh, man, I have to watch him. But I do think that'll change maybe in the next couple of weeks.
So I want to ask you about that one guy, because there are a bunch of players that you alluded to who are expected to be All-Americans. But who's the one guy that you have your eye on?
Well, Luka Garza, man, is the 6'11 big man at Iowa.
Garza just dunked under Bashanishvili, and he dunks to give Iowa the lead. Do you know why he's able to get past?
He wins every National Player of the Year award if it wasn't for Obi Toppin. You know, I mean, his numbers were phenomenal, and he's just going to get better.
In the back, Garza, rainbow. Oh, come on.
Luka Garza. I guess that's why it's raining so hard outside.
Iowa has a chance to reach the Final Four for the first time since 1979. First Big Ten championship in 40 years. They're chasing history. And Luka Garza's cool, man, because he's been watching film. And he's been watching Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic and all those guys. But he's really been studying Jack Sikma and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wait, how does that happen?
His dad's like an old school basketball guy. And he is actually going to bring back the skyhook. He told me that. Like, Luka Garza wants one of his go-to moves this season to be the skyhook, like Kareem, and he's been working on it, and he thinks he can pull it off. So I think that'll be fun to watch.
So if he brings back the skyhook, is there a chance we may get the goggles? Can we get Luka Garza, regardless of his eyesight, to get the goggles?
I'm going to encourage it. I'm going to promote that idea because it seems like they go hand in hand. But I'll start with the skyhook, man. I honestly don't know why more big guys don't use that move. It was impossible to stop with Kareem.
Right.
And I don't think it'll be any different now.
So in terms of the newcomers, the young bloods who are clearly a lot younger than Luka Garza, who are the incoming freshmen, or who is the incoming freshman that we should be looking out for here?
It's Kay Cunningham. I mean, that's the dude.
Cunningham, the turnaround. Pure stat stuffer. 12 points, 7 boards, 4 assists.
Oh, he does so much.
Routine line for Cunningham. Complete
play. Oklahoma State, 5-star kid, 6'7", 6'8", ball handler, point guard, can do everything. I think the thing you'll notice right away is his body and just how ready he is already for the NBA. You see him in high school and he just can get to wherever he wants to go. Now, he's at Oklahoma State, so he's going to have to be really good in order to get people to pay attention. But I think he's that legit, and I think he's the number one pick in next summer's NBA draft. Kay Cunningham is one of the better freshmen I've seen the last 3-4 years, and I think he'll be maybe the most exciting player in America.
Well, it's also interesting because Oklahoma State, already like a relatively smaller school, but also they can't be playing in March, right? Even if there is a March Madness.
Yeah, you got the postseason ban. The Oklahoma State ban comes from a situation that preceded Mike Boynton, the current head coach. There was a staff member who was tied to the FBI's investigation into college basketball that started in 2017. And this is the penalty, and this is the result of that. So Cade Cunningham is paying for the sins of someone that he didn't know, had no association with, but Cade and his teammates have to get it in before then. I think maybe the advantage is, with all the interruptions potentially this season, it'll be harder to follow the college basketball schedule. So we will follow the stars of the sport. And that's why I think there will be a big spotlight on Cade Cunningham, who won't play in the tournament, but if you're lucky, might play for your favorite NBA team.
So, Myron, I do want to look ahead, perhaps irresponsibly ahead. And let's pretend that we get to March. We're at March. There are little to no interruptions, miraculously. And we're in this bubble in Indianapolis. Who is your incredibly early pick to win this whole thing?
I would say Gonzaga, to me, is the team that has it all. Corey Kispert's coming back, one of the top returning players in America. You add Jalen Suggs, who's a 5-star recruit out of Minnesota, point guard, two sports star, extremely athletic, was great in football too. You add him to an experienced Gonzaga team with Mark Few. That to me is the team I would pick to cut down the nets. Plus, at some point, Mark Few has to get one, right? Like at some point, like Mark Few is just going to get a national championship. He's been right there so many times. Would have been a number one seed again last year if the tournament hadn't been canceled. But I feel like Jalen Suggs is that athlete that Gonzaga hasn't had. And I think he changes everything.
So now I want the even more dangerous prediction. Do you think we're going to complete this season?
That is an important question, and it is a more dangerous prediction. I'll say this. I will guarantee you that we have an NCAA tournament. How about that? I will guarantee it. Now, what I won't guarantee is that we'll have a real regular season. And I won't guarantee that the NCAA tournament will have 68 teams. But I guarantee that we will stage some kind of tournament because the NCAA is willing to invest millions of dollars to make it happen because, once again, they lost $375 million last year. They are not going to lose that money again. So I think for sure we will complete the season with the NCAA tournament. No idea what happens before that. And don't get stuck on 68 teams because I don't see that happen.
Myron Medcalf, healthcare reporter, business reporter, college basketball expert, and possibly prophet. Thank you for explaining all of it on ESPN Daily.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, those are the challenges facing college basketball. But coming up, I want to talk about college football and what to expect from the playoff committee as they finally meet tonight.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. The very first college football playoff rankings of the season are out tonight at 7 Eastern, adding yet another layer of controversy onto this uniquely controversial season. We're talking conferences starting weeks apart, star players like Trevor Lawrence sidelined by COVID protocols, and highly contentious day of cancellations. So how does a job that is subjective and contentious in a normal year get done in a year that's not like any other? ESPN's Heather Dinich has been covering the CFP committee for years. So I asked her to take me through what to expect in 2020. So Heather, you've participated in a mock CFP selection committee before, right?
I've done it about 5 times, all the way back to when I was the role of Condoleezza Rice. And I've played the role of the chair, but it's really a much more detailed process than people think. You don't just sit down at a table, slap down 25 teams and call it a day and go home. I mean, they're literally meeting all day Monday, half of the day Tuesday, and making sure that they're comfortable with it before they leave.
And what is meeting and that process like this year in the era of virtual Zoom meetings? How is it going to be different, or how will it be the same?
It's going to be extremely different. First of all, every single committee member on Monday morning before the meetings begin, they're given a daily antigen test. They are in a room at the Gaylord Texan that is literally twice the size of what they usually meet in. It's over 1,000 square feet. There's at least 6 feet between each committee member. They're all required to wear masks. Even the way that their food is served is different. Typically, it's just you serve yourself. Now there's plexiglass and it's buffet style. There's somebody behind the glass. But the biggest thing is obviously the committee members all having to take tests. And if you get a positive test as a committee member, then you have to follow up with a PCR test to confirm it. And if you have a positive test, you are in your hotel room at the Gaylord Texan Resort for 2 weeks per CDC guidelines, 14 days of isolation. Or if you feel well enough and you live close enough, you're allowed to drive home.
So that's obviously a very involved set of protocols that are there to help govern the deciding of a bunch of teams that have been severely affected by a really intense set of protocols. I mean, how different is this job of being on the committee this year, Heather, in terms of deciding the top four teams versus in years past?
I think it's more difficult. I think it's more difficult because you don't have those ACC, SEC non-conference games. You don't have Oregon, Ohio State to help separate those two teams right off the bat. And look, if Oregon is an undefeated Pac-12 champ and Ohio State is an undefeated Big Ten champ, maybe they're both in. They probably both are, right? But those types of big non-conference games in the past have helped those comparisons and those debates and lean a little bit more towards the team that played a stronger strength of schedule. So their challenge is to determine if a 7-1 team right now is better than a 3-0 team. You know, you've heard apples to oranges, right? This is apples to oranges to bananas to pizza slices. There's no standard across the board here in terms of resumes. It's all different. And the Pac-12 is playing from behind because they only started in November.
In terms of that scheduling disparity, do you have a sense as to how that is going to be unpredictable, or do you have a sense as to how they're going to be seeing that?
Well, I think that the eye test is going to come into play possibly this year more than any other. When you're looking at a team like Clemson, they don't have the best schedule. They haven't won a football game since Halloween. Let that sink in. Clemson has not won a football game since Halloween. Trevor Lawrence hasn't played in weeks. You know he's good. Whereas when you look at Ohio State, they didn't pass the eye test necessarily against Indiana. They had 3 turnovers for Justin Fields. Their defense surrendered almost 500 passing yards. There's holes in the secondary that we've seen not just against Indiana, but against Rutgers. So, yeah, they're 3-0. They're one of the best teams in the country. But how much credit does the committee give Cincinnati? Just went on the road and beat a really good UCF team that's only a couple of points away from being undefeated themselves. All of those things come into play. But I think my biggest question is how high do they rank Cincinnati?
Yeah. And by the way, on Clemson, like with Trevor Lawrence having missed that game, is there a sense as to, okay, the resume might have been even stronger if he had played, so let's sort of factor that in the way that they would have accounted for maybe a normal injury? Or is this going to be treated as its own particular case because it's a COVID-related issue?
No, it won't be treated as any different than a player who missed because of injury. And I talked to CFP Executive Director Bill Hancock about this, because if you look at the committee's protocol, it specifically says injuries to key players. And he said, we should change that word to availability, because the committee, even before this year, considered if a player was out for a suspension or targeting, penalties, whatever the reason players miss games or halves, the committee is well aware of it. And this falls under that same category.
And I guess the biggest question of all of this, Heather, given all of the anarchy you described, do you think we're actually going to get this thing, the college football playoff itself, come January 2021?
fingers, toes, arms, legs crossed. That's what the commissioners are hoping for. Yes, as of now, their hope is to crown a champion on January 11th, Miami Gardens, Florida. Their biggest question right now is what happens if a semifinalist has a COVID issue and can't play in either the Rose or the Sugar Bowl on January 1st, because that's when you start to really have to think about pushing the playoff back.
Heather Dinich, formerly Condoleezza Rice, thank you for making sense of the apples and the oranges and the bananas and all the pizza.
That's Madam Secretary to you, but thank you so much for having me on.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.